nearly 2 years after the coup d'etat against President Jean-Bertrand Aristide, and a few weeks before the scheduled presidential elections, the country of Haiti still finds itself in turmoil. We had a chance to speak with John McDonald, a Haiti solidarity activist from Montreal, currently in Port-au-Prince, and Patrick Ely, a longtime grassroots organizer in Haiti. As the Caribbean nation moves towards its elections, scheduled for January 8, 2006, they tell us about political violence, Canadian imperialism, prospects for Haiti's future, and the tactics of resistance of the Haitian people to win back their democracy that was stolen. I'm currently on the phone with John McDonald and Patrick Ely. John is a longtime Haiti solidarity activist and independent journalist from Canada who is currently in Haiti. And Patrick is a Haitian who is has a long involvement himself in social movements in Haiti. We're going to be speaking to them both. But first to John, welcome to CKUT, John.
Thank you, Aaron, and good evening to all your listeners.
So maybe we can start with a general update on the situation. You've been in Port-au-Prince. Can you tell us what the city and what Haiti is going through right now in the lead up to these elections, or what many Haitians are calling selections?
Certainly, coming back here, one of the first things that's evident is that the United Nations, its icons, its emblems and banners over the streets, its vehicles, and its personnel, most of all its troops, are visible everywhere. I should say everywhere with one major exception. But generally speaking, visible everywhere. However, in the last few weeks, we've been spending a good deal of time in Cité Soleil, and as far as clearly the international forces are concerned, as well as the local elites here, Cité Soleil remains a major problem for them. They aim, but have repeatedly said that they intend to pacify or to establish control over Cité Soleil. I'm quite certain that they want to be able to tear down the massive, colorful gantry over Bois Neuf, which celebrates Dread Wilme with local artists' paintings in between portraits of Aristide and Che Guevara. The situation otherwise is relatively peaceful and normal. There has certainly been an upsurge recently in the last month, again, of kidnappings. But these still are not things which concern most ordinary Haitian people. As far as Cité Soleil is concerned, we have been down there under fire. We have also been down, for instance, last Friday at the end of the week, which saw the killing of Canadian police officer, the retired Mountie Mark Bourque, watching the Brazilians undertake a threefold operation, constructing themselves a permanent base in the center of Pelé, very, very close to Cité Soleil, right across Route Nationale 1, simultaneously carrying out a humanitarian operation for the cameras and tapes of several embedded journalists who the Brazilian troops ferried in, where a few dozen gleaming white buckets with colorful logos were distributed to local women. Gift-wrapped, rather expensive gift-wrapped toys distributed to perhaps about 100 children. I got myself into this compound despite not being embedded, not wearing a UN blue headgear or a Kevlar vest like the other journalists, but found it quite difficult to get out once I got in. But when I did get out, what we found, and the people I was working with outside had been tracking the movement of black-hooded individuals in the community acting as informers who were pointing out to Brazilian troops supposed bandits. However, when we talked to their neighbors of 20 years standing, they were saying that at least in several cases, these people who had no criminal behavior or activity had just been picked out by the informant. But I think that what we can see is likely to happen. It's possible to be crying wolf over this, but is that there is a kind of a perhaps a more subtle operation now to take control over Cité Soleil. It's a massive teeming slum down by the seashore of normally 300,000 people. There are probably not many more than 200,000 there now. A lot of people have left under the pressure of the cutting off of water as a punitive measure, the restrictions on travel, as well as the atrocious behavior and often random shooting, it seems, of the Jordanian minister, that is United Nations troops.
You had brought up Mark Bork just before. Of course, Mark Bork was in the news, in the mainstream news, very much a front page story here in Canada last week, because he was, of course, the RCMP officer who was shot to death recently in Cité Soleil. Maybe you could let us know what the reaction was in Haiti to the death of Mark Bork, considering he was down there as a part of a police force who are training the Haitian National Police.
Well, I think I'll split that kind of my discussion of the reaction to Bork's death into two parts. Certainly, twice last week after Bork's death, including several hours on Friday after witnessing this minister operation in Pelé, we were in Cité Soleil, and people—I mean, Haitian people have an absolute extraordinary kind of degree of empathy, and it, without exception, everybody. I mean, I'm talking here, including people, red-hot militant anti-occupation folks, were very sad about Bork's death at an individual level. However, they coupled it, as I'm sure the mainstream reporting in Canada and from what I saw online certainly didn't, with the fact that so many hundreds of people in Cité Soleil have been killed, including several whose bodies we've seen while we have been here. And also coupled it to the fact that Canada is in this country as an occupying force, as an imperial power, as a sub-imperial power, but certainly Canada has played a large role in the dismantling of democracy in this country.
Mm-hmm.
They were making political points. Their empathy was genuine, but they did want a bit of context put to this. Now, as far as other reactions were concerned, on Wednesday, part of the reporting I know in Canada was this kind of memorial service before Bork's body was flown back to Canada. And on Wednesday at that memorial service, Canadian Ambassador Claude Boucher, an apt name, his role, and certainly the most vehement Canadian ambassador of six that I have known here, and least sympathetic to ordinary Haitians. But Ambassador Claude Boucher, the de facto Prime Minister Gerard Larcher, and even the UN Secretary General's special representative here, the top UN official here, Chilean Juan Gabriel Valdez, were all taking a pretty hard line. So I would say that, and Valdez at that occasion said, the next 2 weeks will show our resolve. La Tortue was the most blusteringly outspoken of them, but Boucher sounded fairly lethal himself. So they were clearly wanting to use Bork's death for nakedly political ends, whereas I would say that their reaction on the streets, both in Cité Soleil and elsewhere over the last 8 days, has been one of empathy, but pleased, understands the context, understands that although we regret this Canadian's death and don't believe that he came here with ill will intentionally or individually, that we're talking here about many hundreds of and thousands of patients having died.
We're now speaking with Patrick Ely, who is a Haitian and a longtime activist within the Lavalas movement. Welcome to CKUT, Patrick.
Thank you.
Right now, in the lead up to this election that's coming in Haiti, and for the last few months, we could say that there's been somewhat of an attempt or an effort in North American mainstream media reporting to try to paint Haiti as a very dangerous, almost evil place. For example, as you mentioned before, the issue with kidnappings. In fact, there was an article in USA Today from December 26th that called Haiti the kidnap capital of the Americas, but also citing drug dealing and killings. Maybe you could talk a bit about this kind of reporting. And what I was wondering was, is there a disparity between these reports that we're getting in the North American media and the actual situation on the ground in Haiti?
There is insecurity in Haiti, and it is mostly the result of the intervention by American and Franco-Canadian forces who are trying to impose their polyarchy rather than democracy on Haiti. You see, democracy is different from other systems. It cannot be forced on a people. It has to be secreted by the people. And this is what the Haitian people have been trying to do. And this is what has been thwarted by the coup d'etat of February 29, 2004, when the elected president was kidnapped by a Franco-Canadian-American intervention. And what we are witnessing now, what is the most striking event, is not so much the increase in criminality, but the fact that the Haitian people are on the move again and wanting to participate in a truly democratic election where it will be one man, one vote, one citizen, one vote. And this is precisely what the powers that be are trying to prevent. So, you know, a lot of the problems that we are now facing, including the real quagmire about the electoral process, including the rise in insecurity, is tied to that particular problem. On the one hand, people who want a true participatory democracy and people who are trying to impose a people-less democracy, if that can be, you know, conceptualized. But that's exactly what is happening here. And it's not going to work. And unless a different course is taken, I think that the situation is going to become worse and worse. Because on the one hand, you have the strong will of the Haitian people, which has been affirmed again and again, to have their say in the future of this country, in the political decisions that affect this country. And on the other hand, you have people, both local and from the international community, hell-bent on removing the popular element from democracy. And this is a recipe for a catastrophe, really.
Let's talk a bit about this democracy that's supposedly coming to Haiti. We have the presidential elections, the first round scheduled for January the 8th, 2006, although we keep hearing that it could be pushed back. Can you talk a bit about some of these issues surrounding the elections and why they keep getting delayed?
Of course. I am pretty sure that if we have something on January the 8th, it certainly will not be an election. It will be a royal mess. Of course, the election have to be pushed back. But the whole approach has to be revisited. You have to realize that the original plan was to have what have been called an acceptable election, with about a tenth of the voters registered and participating in a kind of, I'd call, domesticated process. But what has happened is that, once again, the Haitian people, who are masters at avoiding traps, after first showing a kind of indifference toward the electoral process, which suited everybody just fine, suddenly decided that they were going to register en masse, you know? So now the engineer of that wonderful people-less democracy are faced with this army of voters that possibly are going to vote wrongly again, which means they're going to elect the people they want to elect. And now what we are seeing, both in terms of all these quagmire in the process itself, and also, I believe, in the act of banditry that raises the insecurity level and the tension level, is an attempt to disenfranchise these people. You know, they want to find a way to have an election with a controlled number of voters, so that you know, somebody that is acceptable to the so-called international community and the local elite can be shooed in a selection process. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this could have gone on possibly without too much trouble or violence had not the Haitian people suddenly decide to mobilize and decide they wanted to vote and once again to choose their own leaders. And, you know, this is going to be the clash between the will of the Haitian people and the plot that are being concocted by a so-called international community and a local elite.
Now, looking back at even very recent history in Haiti, we've seen what happens when Haitians pick a democratically elected leader. Of course, February 2004 was the second coup against Aristide, who was elected twice. Maybe looking ahead in the future, a year from now, what do you see as the potential results of this election should the Haitian people actually get to participate in what we would consider to be a free and fair election? Where do you see Haiti's democracy, let's say, 6 months or a year from now?
This is a very, very serious and tough question. You see, we cannot once again simply be content of voting in a leader or a leadership massively. We have also to build and strengthen the grassroots organization that will ensure that such a government, such a leadership, cannot be so easily taken down. Mm-hmm. I am not totally sure that the conditions exist as we speak for such an outcome. But I'm pretty sure, almost 100% sure, that if the elections are fair and free, which means simply not all this fancy biometric digital national identity card, but simply the basis of all democratic elections. Everybody who's entitled to vote has the opportunity to vote. Nobody gets to vote more than once, and the ballots are counted transparently, correctly. If we have an election like that, Lavalas is going to be swept back into power, but in a very, very clear way. Now, it's obvious that such a victory will be only a partial one. There will still remain the matter of national sovereignty, which is, only an empty concept when you have almost 10,000 armed foreigners on your soil. We're going to have to renegotiate our sovereignty, but it can only be done if the elected officials have a clear and massive mandate. And as we speak, only Lavalas can get this kind of mandate.
A very important thing, I think, for our listeners here in Montreal and Canada is that, of course, and this fact is all too well known to Haitians, Canada played a huge role in not only the coup d'etat against Aristide in 2004, but also in the lead up to these elections. Patrick, do you have a message for listeners here in Canada tonight about our involvement in Haiti over the last 2 years?
Yes, definitely. You see, Canada has been, up to this point, quite well perceived in Haiti. And the last 2 years have changed that drastically. The people of Canada should know that the policy that has been followed by the Canadian government is undermining the position of Canada as it pertains to Haiti and also to countries like Haiti who are looking at what Canada is doing here. I think the people of Canada should lean on the government so that they should pull back from this policy and allow, if not help, the Haitian people to choose their own destiny. You know, Haiti cannot be simply a pawn in the game between Canada and its southern giant neighbor. It all will end with the image of Canada and of Canadians being tarnished, using Canadian taxpayers' money. It's been a mess. And, I'd like people from Canada to come here and ask the average Haitian what good this Canadian intervention has brought into their lives.
We've been on the phone with Patrick Ellie, an activist in Haiti, speaking to us from Port-au-Prince. Thank you very much for taking the time with us tonight, Patrick.
And thank you for giving us the opportunity to talk to the Haitian people.
My brother is a refugee, Nati Dredna. My sister is a refugee.
This interview with John MacDonald and Patrick Ellie on the current political situation in Haiti was produced for the CKUT Community News Collective in Montreal by Aaron Lakoff. A day after day, we keep on